Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. We are broadcasting today from Annapolis with our partners, the Maryland State Education Association, who helped organize this town meeting with a number of our elected officials, people who represent education around the state, to talk about both the issue of maintenance of effort, which is where the counties and the city have to maintain a certain level of funding for their schools. Seven jurisdictions have not met that effort, but that is now coupled with the Governor Martin O'Malley's desire to put $240 million back to the counties to take a portion of paying for teacher pensions. And many people think that is at the crossroads of a disaster. In some people's perspective, how are we going to pay for education and take care of our children? And as I said at the other hour, I want to say it again this hour, that we are dedicating this hour to Robert Marchetti, who is a Baltimore County public school teacher, a physical education teacher, who was in the Army National Guard, who was killed while on duty in Afghanistan. And so one of our public school teachers took care of our children, gave his life for his country, and we're dedicating this hour to him and giving our best to his family and all of his students and the colleagues who worked with him in Baltimore County. So we're joined here on this panel right now, newly joining us, Delegate Tom Hucker, District 20, Montgomery County. Remaining with us are some guests from our last hour, which is good to have them. Delegate Heather Mazier is with us, District 20, Montgomery County. She's Vice Chair of the Education Economic Development Committee for Appropriations. Do I have that right? Good. Also joining us this hour is Councilwoman Ingrid Turner. Councilwoman Turner is a councilwoman in Prince George's County, County Council, District 4. She's also president of the Maryland Association of Counties, which has something to say about all this, I think. And we are remaining here is Ray Leone, who is president of the Anne Arundel County PTA, and also on the state board of the PTA. And we have another delegate joining us, Delegate Ann Kaiser, who is from District 14 of Montgomery County and chair of the Education Subcommittee of the Ways and Means Committee. So let's jump in. We're going to jump here to the audience after my first question and really get down the line here and let these teachers have their say this hour. I think that the biggest question I have, I think one of the biggest questions we have here, is as these negotiations go on for the next month and a half before you end the session, and I know you'll be trumping those halls as well as president of MACO, as well being a councilwoman, Ingrid Turner, how are we going to pay for this? What are we going to do? One of the things we talked about in the last hour, Heather Mazier raised some issues, and I would push it a tad further. When Governor Martin O'Malley was in this same room in the Calvert House for our Annapolis summit on the opening day of the session, he blurted out, I don't want to have fees, I'd rather raise taxes, what he said. Everybody kind of went wide-eyed for a minute, and he was talking about raising another penny on the sales tax as one way of doing it. And other people would argue then, should we broaden the sales tax? Because it's the 21st century, not the 20th century, and are we putting sales tax on the right effort since our economy is changing? And C, as someone said that I interviewed today here on a very different matter, should we be taxing in the state of Maryland things that go beyond income tax, things like capital gains, things like other kinds of income that are not ever taxed? And another, of course, would say, well, what are you talking about? You shouldn't be taxing any of this stuff. Leave it alone. So, but the question is, how do we pay for this? How do we pay for education? And so let me first pick on our two delegates who just got here. Not pick on, but bring you in, bathe you in fire, so to speak. And Tom Hucker, and then Ann Kaiser. And then we'll go out here to our audience.
Sure. Thanks, Mark. And you'll have to catch me up on the previous hour. I just got out of an extremely boring hearing.
should have been here. It was much more fun.
I should have been here, I wish.
just kidding.
But, I mean, I think in tax policy, and I was used to work on this as an advocate before I was elected, I think tax policy, you know, people expect their taxes to be adequate to provide the revenue we need for the services that people expect, that they are fair, and that people feel like they're transparent and understandable, and, you know, to a certain extent that you follow the Willie Sutton rule, that you go where the money is. We are a progressive state. People believe that the people who have been doing the best in our economy and get the most benefits from the state should be paying a higher percentage. And while we have that intent in our law, in the execution, we're not so good at it. There's a comptroller report that came out at the end of last year that showed the top quintile of the public pays a lower effective tax rate than the other 80% of the public, and that the top 1% pays a far lower rate than really any of us do. They're down about 3%, while most of the rest of the public are, you know, in the high 5% to low 6% range. So we need to do, I think, a better job of collecting an income tax in a progressive way, and we need to do a better job of collecting corporate tax, because while we collect from lots of Maryland small businesses, we're not very good at collecting from interstate and multi-state companies. Comptroller has repeatedly shown that about half to two-thirds of the largest companies in Maryland pay no income tax at all to the state. PEPCO was just singled out in a national report at making almost $800 million in profit while not paying any income tax to any state anywhere. So we need to close those loopholes. We need to pass combined reporting like most states have done that have a corporate income tax.
Delegate Kaiser.
What he said. The only part I'd like to add, because we have limited time and a lot of people in line, because I really do mean what he said. You know, the usual comment that taxes are the price we pay for civilized society. Mm-hmm. I think every single one of us wish we had more dollars in our pocket and had less to pay, but then people always seem to appreciate the fire trucks coming down the street, mm-hmm. our roads, and our great quality schools that we have here in the state of Maryland. So the only thing I'd really add is that I believe when it comes to tax policy, it should be the ability to pay principle, and certainly people who have more should pay more.
Let me introduce also, who has not been on the panel before just now, Councilwoman Ingrid Turner, who's also president of the Maryland Association of Counties, Councilwoman in Prince George's County, a county that's facing its own budget deficits.
Yes, and with that, I can't echo any more than the delegate just said, in the sense of we are all like it when the fire truck arrives. We all like it when we have sustainable nonprofits. We all like it when we have adequate schools and teachers. And with that, our county budgets are already being strained. Our county budgets are looking at deficits. And the teacher pension shift would just burden us astronomically.
So let me do this, as I promised. And I'd like to turn this over to some of our teachers. Let me do this. I know teachers. I was one once for a while in Baltimore City Schools. Don't shoot me, but I was an organizer for the AFT. But it was a long time ago, 1979. Since I know teachers, and they're in my family as well, I know teachers can talk a long time. So, but I'm going to ask you to kind of keep it a little shorter this time, this hour, because a lot of teachers lined up and want to say something. And the more lengthy the stories are about our lives, the less we'll get to everybody's voice. So, sir, please go ahead. Identify yourself.
My name is Josh Rubin. I am a special educator from Montgomery County. First of all, I just want to say for your listeners, the roads in Montgomery County are not paved with gold, as is the common misconception. We have somewhere in the vicinity of, I think the number I heard was 40% of students who receive at least some subsidy for free and reduced meals. We have more ESOL students than we ever have before. We have people who move from other countries to Montgomery County and to the state of Maryland, specifically because of our school system. As a special educator, I work with the severely and the profoundly disabled, and I happen to know for a fact certain families who send their children to my school have moved to Montgomery County specifically because the special education in Montgomery County is among the best in the country. The state of Maryland likes to talk about its number one public school status. I got an email from the governor about a month ago, saying how great it was that the state of Maryland is again the number one school system in the country. And that's fantastic, and I think that it's great. But that was last year. We were number one last year. We weren't number one in 2012. We were number one in 2011, 10, 9. Are we going to stay number one? And I think a lot of that rests on what the people in the State House decide to do. All of them like to puff up their chests, and say, we're the number one school system. We have the number one school system in the country. All I have to say to that, please, is put your money where your mouth is. if we're going to assume that we're going to keep this number one status for the rest of eternity, anybody who believes that is about as misguided as believing that the real estate market is going to continue to increase until 2008. My question, and I know I'm speaking to three delegates from my county, all of whom are very good supporters of public education, but what is it that you can do that will actually be helpful, especially since now that we have no more senators, because I was kind of hoping to be able to speak to one of the senators from the last hour, but what is it that you guys can do in the House that's going to talk Mike Miller down off the ledge that he has put education funding in?
Who wants to go that first?
Sure.
Ann Kaiser, go ahead.
Right, first thing, in regards to our number one status, I know you're talking about some people's chest all puffed out, but the thing I always say at community meetings is, we may be number one, but we're not number one for all kids, and certainly we shouldn't rest until we are. So I do think that the state investments over the years has shown the state's commitment and support for education and wanting to keep it in that place. To answer your question, if you're talking about what will back Mike Miller down, in regards to the pension shift, I think it's very clear that how all of these issues play together this session remain to be seen. I know from everyone who's watching the legislative session, you see us past the halfway point and wonder why more things aren't done. And I think for people who've spent a lot of time down here, like my friend Jane Stern in the front row, as you know, that the first few month and a half we're doing all the hearings and doing all the proposals. And then it becomes more the time where the proposals are being looked at and the compromises and the negotiations. I think what's out there right now on the different tax proposals, what's out there right now on the pension shift, what will be public in the next 12 to 18 hours on the maintenance of effort bill, how they all play together, I think it remains to be seen. So to say how we'll back the Senate president down, who's been Senate president since we were all in, I don't know, elementary school.
Since before I was born.
Before you were born. Yeah. I think there's a lot of moving parts out there. I think it's also true that people in the room may also know that if something becomes inevitable here in the state house, to say that we're entirely against it and only against it doesn't allow us to be part of the negotiation to make it less bad or to make it better. So I think we all have to be cognizant of that as we move forward with the pension shift conversation. We might think it's a bad idea, but if it's happening anyway, what can we do to make it not as bad?
Heather?
I think Delegate Kaiser.
Well, I'm curious, as you walk the halls, what are you going to be pushing them for? Have you heard the Senate?
Well, we're trying to hold firm and get as many other jurisdictions to hold firm as possible. You have a united front. I could speak for Montgomery County. You have a united front in the House of a delegation that is saying no, no, no in every meeting, every possible opportunity, no, no, no to the shift. We're encouraging our colleagues in Prince George's and Baltimore City, at least, to hold firm as well. You can't do anything in this state if you don't have the majority of the votes from those three jurisdictions. But we've learned in the past, in the 2007 special session, there were things that were being put on the table that Montgomery County was very opposed to, and we hung firm and we kept saying no, and then all of a sudden, talk about the doomsday proposals from the earlier hour. We got a Montgomery County doomsday proposal that basically was like, okay, you don't vote with us. Here's the proposal we're going to go with, and here's all the things we're stripping out from Montgomery County that was going to hurt us even worse than for the underlying proposal. And so there are those kind of games that can happen up here that makes this whole negotiation more complicated than what you're going to read about in the newspapers. I think another piece that could be helpful is on the political side of this, the three jurisdictions I discussed are fairly united in opposing the shift. One on the merits of bad policy for education, bad for teachers, bad for students, but it's also bad for us politically. We're not looking to shift the problem to our friends at the county level. where there are political differences in some of the rural areas, you have some, I'm going to just put it in basic political discussions. You've got some people who are Democrats here who have Republicans in their counties who they don't mind putting the burden on the Republicans to say, you always say you don't want to increase taxes. You run against us for raising taxes here at the state level. Let's put the burden on you to have to raise the taxes at the local level to fix this. And so there are a lot of complicated political discussions and scenarios that interplay with the politics of where votes line up for this. And so don't hesitate to work every angle to try to get your colleagues in every portion of this state to make their voices be heard, and don't just expect the big three jurisdictions to pull this one out. We need support across the board
on
this.
Absolutely.
Let's go back here. Let's see.
Okay, hi, I'm Jennifer Martin, and I'm also from Montgomery County. I'm a high school teacher at Wooten. I teach English, and I've been a teacher for about 10 years. So I was one of the lucky ones who was hired in by and educated by the state at Johns Hopkins to become a teacher in my 40s. Before that, I'd been in business for a Fortune 500 company. I'd worked for the federal government. And so I think I'm the kind of person you want to keep. And I moved to the county because I wanted to educate my children in the public schools. I liked the school so much that I decided to change my profession. So I think that what I'm concerned about is this idea about pushing the revenue raising to the counties and wondering about the courage of my state legislators to ask for what is needed to support public education, which I believe really does support democracy. The other thing that I'm concerned about is I'm a homeowner. My property values are what they are because of our fine schools. And guess what? If you're going to attack my pension, then my house value is even more important to me than it was before. I need to make sure that both things are not going to be negatively impacted by the state's decisions. I'm very concerned, and I'm very disappointed in what I see as a pushing of the courageous decision down to the local level. I feel as if the state should be stepping up to the challenge here. I wanted to remind you about the kinds of things that I'm seeing in my classroom. I've been a teacher for 10 years now. When I started, I had an average of about 22 kids a class. I'm a regular educator, but I teach inclusion with special ed students, and usually in the beginning I would have an aide or even another teacher to be co-teaching with me. Well, those numbers have been diminishing, and so many of us are now in much larger classrooms. I'm teaching more like, I think I have my, we're capped at 29 supposedly. Well, I'm capped out and above. Last semester I was above my number of maximum number per class. So I'm teaching close to 30 kids a class now, up from, as I say, about 22. And we have fewer supports in the classroom. Plus there's been a movement toward inclusion so that you're teaching more and more special needs kids, emotionally disturbed kids, kids who need individual attention, which I am less able to provide than before, as much as I would like to give it. So I'm concerned about that. And really, what I want you to understand is that this is something that is affecting our children first, but who else is being affected here more than the general public? It's women's jobs we're talking about here. Something like 84% of teachers are women, and I don't hear anybody bringing this up, that when you stick it to teachers, you're sticking it to women. And that really bothers me, because teachers are not selfish. We are generous people. We are not here to make a profit. The people who profit from our work are the public. We bring jobs to counties because we bring an educated population up who can be hired. We bring businesses in because they want to send their kids to schools too that are good. So we don't have low taxes, we have higher taxes, but we provide the services. I'm sorry to interrupt you and to
that's
go
right.
on
I just
too
want to
long.
Give people a chance to respond. And people behind you a chance to say something as well. I think that your point, especially your last point, given everything that's happening in this country around women's rights at this moment, is a critical point to raise about this affecting women. But Ingrid, I'd like to let you respond first. And I'm curious for you to respond as president of MACO. about the conversations going on around the counties around this issue, because that's what you're doing in the halls of Annapolis, is lobbying for MACO, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Again, it's exactly what she said. It's a women's issue. It's about protecting the resources that we have in our counties already, but the resources that we need to continue to move forward. I'm from Prince George's County. We're currently facing a $124 million deficit. With a $124 million deficit, you add that onto that the possibility of over $30 million bill that comes for the first year. And that's just the first year, because in the out years, it looks to double and increase astronomically again. And with that, I think I want to also point this out, the problem that we have. And we know that the governor has worked with us in the past, and we hope that the governor will continue, because I think Delegate Kaiser said that this is kind of a negotiation. This is a starting point. So we ask you to hold firm, because we can't afford even a piece of this. And the reason why I say that is there are some sweeteners that are mentioned. But I say those sweeteners are not guaranteed. Those sweeteners, a lot of the delegates, as I walk the halls, they're saying, we can't pass this piece, we can't pass this piece, we can't pass that piece. There's four pieces that they're talking about that are sweeteners. But in the end, those sweeteners may not pass, and those sweeteners are only for the first year. So as we walk the halls, just as you all are walking the halls, we ask you to join us. As MACO, we ask you to join us to talk to the delegates that are not already confirmed. These delegates here are saying that they're strong and they're steadfast. We need to get to everyone, because as you've seen it before, every vote counts, and it may come down to that one vote.
So let me ask this question before we go back to the audience. Go back to Ray Leone, who was the head of the PTA in Anne Arundel County. And by the way, folks, as I asked this question, we asked a broad scope of people to join us tonight. We're not on the same page as they are in this hour, but that's fine, just to let you know that. We weren't trying to do this intentionally. But I'm curious, because you live in Anne Arundel County, and there are a lot of homeowners in Anne Arundel County, and people who vote in Anne Arundel County say, no, we don't want to raise taxes. We don't want this to happen.
Probably the better part of 80%.
So talk a bit about the reception, even in your PTA or the PTAs that you represent, to these kinds of issues. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing that the folks that have children care. The folks that don't have children have other priorities. And that's understandable. I mean, everybody has a priority in life on what's important to them. But obviously, you know, our children are what comes first to us. And that's what we advocate on, that, you know, and we advocate quite truly for all children, not just our own children. That'd be the difference between PTA and PTO, a whole different argument. But that being said, you want enough clarity that when we look at it through your eyes, that we know where we can help, where we can say things, and to be able to see through some of the shell game that goes on as it's going on. We can't really participate as parents if we're not knowledgeable parents. So I also encourage all parents, any PTA that are listening, you know, reach out and touch the delegates and the senators that represent you and tell them how you feel on a subject, first off. But from my point of view, Anne Arundel County has a lot of cards that it can still play on the table, but doesn't choose to use them until somebody else does something politically first. It's always reactionary.
Can I add? I wanted to add the part where you said that as I walk around and go to different counties throughout the state, there, even if you don't have a child in the school system, they care about this issue. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they care about this issue is because if the teacher pension shift comes, it affects all other services, senior services, nonprofit services, police and fire. So as you talk to your neighbors that may not have kids in school, I ask you to ask them, are they using human services? Are they using social services? Are they using their senior center? Are they using other services that will be impacted should the teacher pension shift come? So we need to galvanize everyone all across, not just teachers, but teachers are important, absolutely.
So we take a very brief break and come right back to our audience and our panelists as we're talking about teacher pensions. We're going to come back and focus a little bit on maintenance of effort when we return, because we haven't delved in that very deeply and we need to. And we'll be right back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're here at the Calvert House in Annapolis. We are here with our partners, the Maryland State Education Association, in a town meeting about the future of education in the state, given the arguments around putting teacher pensions back to the counties, or partially back to the counties, and the question of maintenance of effort, where seven jurisdictions have not been able to meet that. We are joined here in this half hour left, Ray Leone, who's president of the Anne Arundel County PTA. Remaining with us also is Delegate Heather Mazier, who's Vice Chair of Education, Economic Development, and Appropriations Committee. Mm-hmm. She's from District 20, Montgomery County. Also from Montgomery County joining us, Delegate Ann Kaiser, who's in District 14, and Chair of Education and Subcommittee of Ways and Means. And Delegate Tom Hucker, District 20, Montgomery County. And Councilwoman Ingrid Turner, who is the 4th District Councilwoman in Prince George's County and also President of the Maryland Association of Counties. And on our way back to our teachers in the audience, let me just ask this quick question, come back to what I said I would bring up, which is maintenance of effort. Now, the two counties here, Anne Arundel County and Montgomery County, didn't meet it. They have not met it. $127 million, I think, if I'm right, from Montgomery County. So one of the things that many people and teachers groups want to see is that counties are forced to meet their maintenance of effort. So how do you get that done in, let's say, Montgomery County? And that would be apropos for other counties as well, though. Ann, go ahead.
Well, I think you ask a great question. And for everyone listening or wondering about maintenance of effort, the way I think of it simply is that it's a, you know, it's a partnership between the state and locals, and that the state, when instituting this about 30 years ago, said to the counties, as long as you maintain your effort, we'll keep giving you more funding. And back in 2002, before the three of us delegates arrived, again, a push from the state to fund education even more, with the requirement, again, that the counties just had to maintain their effort. And what has happened in the last few years, especially, as we all know, with the national recession, the economy here in Maryland and within our local jurisdictions, it became a real challenge for our counties. During that time, the state has maintained its funding, but admittedly has cut so many other things that the county needs, as I'm sure Councilwoman Turner will mention. What we're working on right now, and we've probably had about 10 meetings this legislative session. Mm-hmm. I think we're introducing the bill tonight to be public tomorrow for hearings later this week on the maintenance of effort law that really does put the teeth back into the maintenance of effort law and will even to some extent enhance the effort.
How does it do that? How will it do that?
It's unfortunate the timing of this show, because the bill's not introduced until tomorrow. It's effectively the Speaker of the House's bill, so I can't get into as many details as I would like. Starting tomorrow, once the bill is public, we can have a broader conversation. But I think the voices have been heard from the teachers, from the school system, from the union, and so forth. There will leave some smaller flexibility for the counties, and I think has been shared with some leading advocates that, you know, the good actors, as has been described, like my own county, Montgomery County, overfunding maintenance of effort for so many years, and how that consideration is given as compared to other counties who don't put the money they have and the revenues they have to education. And so there will still be some flexibility. So I hope I have a chance to talk to everyone again tomorrow and tell them a little bit more. But I think on balance, it will be something appreciated by the teachers of Maryland.
All right, let's go back to the audience here, Mike. And then,
what you think.
Well, this won't be heard until Wednesday we're on the stage, so you can tell us now if you like. Go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Laura Brown. I'm a media specialist at Wheaton High School in Montgomery County, and I live in Anne Arundel County. So I wanted to address the question, where does the money come from? They're building a new casino across the street from where I live, and I know that the teachers in Anne Arundel County are counting on that money to make our schools better. The reason I live in Anne Arundel County, because when I moved here from Alabama in 2000, and I support myself, I could not afford to live in Montgomery County. So I cannot afford to live in the county in which I work. So I'm very concerned about the gas tax, because I commute every day. But I'm also concerned about how gambling is going to affect our community. Our community is relatively new. We don't have a lot of amenities as far as social services right there in North Anne Arundel County. So if we're going to have casinos in North Anne Arundel County, Baltimore City, possibly table gambling and slots at the National Harbor, which is being proposed, closed, and we have a lottery. How do these dollars, as one of the panelists said in the last hour, are they really coming to education? Because I'm from Detroit. I've heard the lies. And Detroit public schools are almost non-existent, but I'm proud to say I'm a product of them. I don't want to see our school system suffer and money earmarked for education be hijacked by corporations, et cetera. So how do we know? Because we're going to make a big sacrifice. 100 is going to turn into a parking lot, 295, 95. We're going to pay a high price for the casinos coming into these areas, these slots. So what is the price they're going to pay to make sure our schools and our communities are safe and effective and best for our children and citizens?
Delegate Hooker, Delegate Mazzier, Councilman.
I share your concern. I voted against taking the slots to referendum. Personally, I find that it's a very poor form of economic development, and it brings more cost to us than good. And in the same way that the lottery was so-called going to be for education, and the slots are so-called for education, it's at least a half-truth in that the money goes to the general fund, and as we discussed in the first hour, a very, very large portion of our general fund goes to education funding. So I don't think it's an outright lie, but it's not like it goes to a lockbox that is dedicated to the funding of all of the needs that we have under Thornton and teacher pensions and all the other things that are bringing us to this discussion tonight. That does differ, though, with the proposal I was talking about earlier about the local option for increasing sales taxes on a referendum. That would be dedicated because it would be money that would never even be collected into the state. It would be collected and housed by the local jurisdiction and required to go into that dedicated purpose. So it's a little bit about how we focus on structuring those things. And I personally just never thought that it was going to bring in the amount of money that they said it was going to bring in. And that's why I'm glad, just focusing back on our discussions here, that we're, in this session at least, marrying the discussion of maintenance of effort with the discussion about the pension shift, because I think as we have a greater discussion on how to give more teeth and put effort back into maintenance of effort and get that local commitment there, it might lessen some of the pressure of those. Mr. Rubin asked earlier how we would get the Senate president to back off the teacher pension shift. I think a lot of the focus for those that support the teacher pension shift comes from a place of, well, the locals hire the teachers, you set the salaries, and you expect the state to pay for it. Personally, I think your salaries aren't high enough. I'd like us to be in charge of that because I'd like to pay you more. But part of the problem is that until we get to a place where there is a sense that there is an evening out of what each jurisdiction, each entity is contributing, that the state has a role to play and that the locals are going to play an equal part. Once we get that balanced out, hopefully through the maintenance of effort improvements, then that might take some of the pressure off from those who are wanting to, say, shift pensions to the counties.
Thank you. Anybody else have to chime in?
No, I think that's exactly right, but in no state have expanded gambling revenues solve the problem or hit the projections that advocates have said. And I think we need to keep our eye on the ball. I think it was Jennifer earlier who said very articulately that, you know, having a world-class school system and as Ann said, getting it to every student in Maryland is good for democracy, is good for economic development. You know, as she said, the cuts have an adverse impact on women. We need to have those conversations, not just on, say, among the choir, with everybody you talk to every day. And I think everybody here and all the advocates for this need to reach outside your comfort zone, say gambling's not the solution, cuts aren't the solution. And you know, we need to focus on what I was mentioning earlier: corporate income tax, high income tax for high income earners, and especially as Mark was mentioning during the break, taxes on high income services, especially like financial services.
Please go ahead.
Hi, I'm Paul Lemley. I'm a social studies teacher from Howard County, and I live in Anne Arundel, too, and I would happily support an increase in taxes where I live. I got a quick two-part question for you, and I'll be simple. Will you vote against the governor's budget if it includes a shift of pension costs to the counties? And the second part is, will you insist on an MOE bill that includes an override for those local tax caps and excludes non-operational costs and retirement obligations?
I would assume that's directed towards the three delegates on the panel here.
Absolutely.
Let me go down the line. Tom, you want to start? Then we'll go to, then we'll just go down the line. Delegate Kaiser and Delegate Mazzier.
Sure. I'll have lots of concerns about a shift, but I don't think it makes sense tonight, as Ann was saying. As soon as you start drawing a line in the sand, it depends on what the shift looks like, how quickly the shift is, the extent of it. As soon as you draw a line in the sand like that, you sort of take yourself out of the conversation. And so I don't think it makes sense to say that in the middle of the legislative session, as many of us are trying to get a much better deal on the table and in the debate.
I would second that, and I would just add with the maintenance of effort, and I was trying to write the notes real quick of what you said, and I didn't get all the details you mentioned, but I do think that the bill that we're putting
an override for local tax caps excludes non-operational costs and retirement obligations.
Well, I mean, I certainly think our conversations on maintenance of effort would be making sure that if the pension were to be shifted, that that wouldn't go to the school system, that would go to the county. So I do think that's already part of the how do these issues play together. And the overriding of the tax caps are one of the things that is being considered right now, but there's a House bill and a Senate bill. So whether I support that in the House, how that plays out once the Senate does their own maintenance of effort bill remains to be seen.
Delegate Mazzier.
As an appropriator, we are never allowed to set a line in the sand publicly on the budget saying, yes, you know, I will not support the budget no matter what if X isn't addressed. However, like has been mentioned, one of the benefits of being in leadership in that committee as a vice chair is that we have a lot of discussions. Chairs and vice chairs come together to make final decisions on what's happening. Every other year, it changes who starts with the budget, and this year the budget starts in the Senate. So in the House, we are going to be in a situation where we aren't taking the first crack at negotiating the budget. We are responding to the budget that the Senate agrees to put together. So it puts us in a little bit of a disadvantage from a negotiating position over on this side. That said, in that back room, I'm fighting like hell in every single discussion to say that this should not happen and under any circumstance, and I'm working to try to pull the votes together. We learned in just as we went through a really tough battle recently with the marriage equality, that you never ever give up, that you have those dogged, determined conversations with your colleagues in the hall every chance you get, and you try to win over one vote at a time and just do whatever you can to make it happen. That said, there are so many things that get funded in the budget. Everything, you know, it's not just education, it's public safety and it's health care, and there are a whole range of things that come into consideration. And we can't say right now with certainty whether or not some of these changes in the maintenance of effort bill might change the whole dynamic of the conversation. I go back to Exhibit A and what I discussed in the first hour. I think the whole pension shift discussion this year can be put off the table because there is no money to be gained in this budget that we are negotiating this session from doing a shift. All of the changes are for out years, and we can have an out year discussion in the interim if necessary if the economic conditions don't turn around.
And I second that part where you say pushing it off to out years as we continue to discuss, and I thank you for fighting in the back room hard, and I know you're fighting hard for us, so we appreciate that. But I want to go back to one thing that you asked about lifting the tax cap. From the Maryland Association of Counties, many of the counties across the state of Maryland cannot or do not support lifting the tax cap or saying you counties can lift the tax cap, because many of our voters out here have said, no, we, for example, in Prince George's County, that would have to go to referendum, and they voted that they don't want to lift the tax cap. We have trim in Prince George's County. So that would not work for Prince George's County because many of our voters would be against that.
Ma'am.
My name is Dawn Pipkin, and I'm an instructional resource teacher in St. Mary's County. I live in one of those districts where education is 38% of our budget, but we're a very wealthy district. I want to ask all of you, someone said in the first hour that they want to stand behind us and be the voice for public education. I'm going to ask all of you to stand in front of us because we are all here having that conversation all the time. But two things. What is PTA doing? What are County Council of Counties? What are those groups doing to educate? Because you see a room full of people who worked all day, who are here because they care about this issue. So what kind of things are those groups, as well as our legislators, doing to get the message out to constituents about why this is important? Because I think education shouldn't be a bipartisan issue. And the other piece is, when you speak about the pension, I wonder if anybody up there could tell us the amount of money that would be stabilizing the pension fund if we had not gone to 2% pension in 2000 when I got hired, and then since changed it how many times, so that now we're back to where we started in 2000 at 7%. So educators are doing that part, going to the general fund as indicated last time. But where's all that money? Because we keep saying it's about sustaining the pension, but we still don't have the answer. Thanks.
Let's start with the PTA. And I'm here because you're also vice president of the state PTA Association.
I actually sit as vice president of councils for Maryland PTA. And Maryland PTA has a legislative agenda. They have folks, about seven of them, that meet basically weekly and go through a bill chart of everything that's pretty much on the educational list. And some to each side of that, depending on how it affects children. Because our guiding principle is what affects children and protecting children. But it's a small amount of folks. It's 9 or 10 folks. Like you said, everybody, you know, I have a real job that, you know, I run a toy store for a living. Mm. And you know, it's a fun job. But I have only a limited amount of time. And I wear a hat as a council president, and I wear a hat as a vice president. And I probably get 3 or 4 hours worth of time sitting on a computer perusing the MLIS, or MS, I always get the MLIS, thank you. I always get that wrong. And
it takes you 3 hours because our website is an 8-track.
Is that cumbersome?
Yeah, it's like an 8-track tape in an iPhone universe.
And it doesn't tell you what you're talking about today.
Well. Yeah.
It never tells you what you're talking about today.
Right.
And the newspaper doesn't tell you what you're talking about today. And you get one side of conversation from who attended the hearing and spoke out. So you never always get, as a parent, the whole story ever until it's either published or somebody comes to a community meeting and talks about it for 15, 20 minutes. And we appreciate that. And you guys put in a ton of time passionately on issues, or you wouldn't be here doing it.
Absolutely.
I wholeheartedly believe that. And as parents, it's incumbent on us to get as much information as we can. And I think some PTAs do a really good job of that. But they're more concerned about what's right in front of them. They're more concerned whether, you know, there's an issue of school uniforms in there, or if they need a playground, or if they need smart boards, or if they've lost a teacher in the fifth grade because of that population shift from third to fourth to fifth. Now all of a sudden they need a teacher in kindergarten. Fifth grade's gonna be the one that eats that population. And you go, you know, 6 or 7 more kids in a classroom with hopefully an extra aide or something. But we find ourselves bogged down in the minutiae that is that, and trying to protect what's close to us right now. And as a county council president, I get to see 84 little snapshots of that. And I get, you know, probably 40 or 50 emails every day that is just, hey, Ray, this is what came up today. How do I handle that? What's the best person to call and contact? Who's, you know, I send out delegate lists and legislator lists probably once a week to folks. These are the 5 people you need to talk to. These are the ones you need to send a letter to, call, email, do something with. Make sure that they know that that issue is important to you. We have, for lack of a better term, a dysfunctional county council in Anne Arundel County at the moment. You know, they can't get out of their own ways, tongue-tied. And it's incumbent upon us as parents to get up there in front of that microphone, as many of us do every budget cycle, and stand in front of them and say, this is what's most important. Sure. Our children, our teachers, and the way that we are doing business. It's not acceptable in Anne Arundel County the way it is right now. It's a hard thing to stomach when you stand there as a parent and look, and they're arguing over District 1 seat for 2 entire council sessions.
So is this in the interest of time? We have like maybe 10 minutes left. I do want to get to my other teacher. No, that's fine.
Can I answer?
Yes.
I think one of your questions was, what are we doing to get the word out? Well, the Maryland Association of Counties, in partnership with many of the unions and many of the stakeholders, has formed a Stop the Shift Coalition. And with that Stop the Shift Coalition, we've held press conferences as a unified press conference with our labor, all the stakeholders involved in this, whether it was fire, police, library, county officials from all the counties, elected officials from all the counties across the state except for one. And we continue to write emails through email blasts. We continue to have work. And I want you all to put this date on your calendar. March 5th, we're going to have another lobbying day here in Annapolis. Stop the teacher pension shift, sponsored by the coalition.
Now, can one of the delegates give a very kind of precise answer to the second question so we can get back to our teachers in the few minutes we have left?
One thing about the advocacy piece, I would say that from Montgomery County's perspective, from the unions, from the teachers, from the civics, from every group, we've been getting this message for at least 5 or 6 years from every group possible about the teacher pension shift, and so much so that I was going to civic association meetings and not hearing it from teachers who were very involved with the issue. But I came down to Annapolis and asked my colleagues from other jurisdictions if they were hearing it as well years ago, and they weren't. So I think it's incumbent upon everyone that if it doesn't happen this year, to not stop the advocacy, because it could happen next year or the year after, and that it has to be heard from every group, and that our union did a good job spearheading this for 5 or 6 years now, that it's trickled down where it became the mantra of our delegation. And I think to make that happen around the state, they have to be hearing it from every group.
Now, we literally have 5 minutes left in this hour, so let's get back here. We didn't get the pension questions, maybe we'll do before we get out of here. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Robert Silkworth. I'm a 40-year veteran teacher at North County High School in Anne Arundel County. And my concern is about kids. That's why I began to teach. Mm-hmm. I think that's why all of the teachers here do teach. It's not for the money. It's because of the fact that we care so much about our kids. I'm concerned about the young teachers. Many of Anne Arundel County's young teachers are $10,000 to $12,000 behind because their steps have not been funded in the past 3 to 4 years, and they took a 2% hit last year with the change of the pension. And we don't want the pension to be sent back to the counties. That is absolutely, it just can't happen. My question, though, is about the maintenance of effort. In the new proposal, which is supposed to be revealed tonight, is there anything in this new proposal that will guarantee that each county will meet the maintenance of effort? And the second part of that question is, right now in Anne Arundel County, it's my understanding that we have not met that, and that our schools, our kids, could be facing a $3.8 million penalty. Kids shouldn't be penalized.
So let me say, in the interest of time, let me say that the people listening to this now, it's Wednesday, so maybe you can answer the question. There's no other press here but us, so.
The answer is yes with conditions, but you'll see the provisions tomorrow.
All right.
That's all she can do. That's
all she can do. Anne Arundel County is $12 million in the whole MOE. It is facing right now that $3.8 million extra chunk, which is basically a penalty taken away from Maryland state aid money coming back. So it's money that we don't actually have at the moment, but it's money we're not going to get either.
So we
start $12 million in the hole.
If the teachers were lined up here, we literally have 2 minutes. So you can both have something said very quickly. You can say it.
Hi, my name is Lynn Harris, and I'm a proud resident of District 20 in Montgomery County. And I'm not a teacher, I'm a parent. And I am just so grateful to the people like you who teach my child every day. And if I were king, you would all make $1 million a year.
We really have you only have 30 seconds.
My question is there anything in maintenance of effort that will make counties take into account not only the number of students in their school districts, but the demographics of those students, the number of kids receiving free and reduced price meals, the number of students needing English language support, the number of students needing special services?
The maintenance of effort law will be based on pure, pupil funding, the 2002 Thornton Law already takes into account those special populations in the funding.
Ma'am, please.
10 seconds.
Hey, 10 seconds.
Kate Weeden, Anne Arundel County. Arnie Duncan came out with a statistic that about 1 million baby boomers out of educators in the next 4 to 6 years are going to retire. What's a competitive edge for Maryland against, well, nationally, with a county pension?
Good question.
Scary question.
What is the competitive edge for Maryland if we shift to a county pension?
To bring teachers here.
We're 54, I understand. How that works, I don't know.
Probably killing the territories, Guam, Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico.
Some states have multiple systems.
Ah, thank you.
Can I ask a question back to you?
Sure.
If this is purely just for devil's advocate purpose and to get a sense from the room whether or not this is still on air. If the shift comes with, and Ingrid's not going to like this question, but if the shift comes with the maintenance of effort changes that require the county, so are you agnostic, as long as everything still gets paid, are you agnostic on who pays the bill? If the state forces the question to the counties and the county has to pay, and there's no question of whether or not you guys are going to get the amount of money needed to still have maintenance of effort and the pensions in place.
No. They said no.
That's good to know, because as I've asked this question generically,
it's going to hurt services across the board if we do it that way.
It always happens at the end of every meeting like this. It gets revved up at the end. But I want to thank all of you for coming out, hardworking teachers being in the audience. I want to thank our partners, the Maryland State Education Association, for making this happen, and all the people who showed up tonight. Ray Leone, who's here from Anne Arundel County PTA, Delegate Heather Mazier from District 20 in Montgomery County, Delegate Ann Kaiser from District 14 in Montgomery County, Delegate Tom Hucker from District 20 in Montgomery County. Maybe we should have done this in Silver Spring. Councilwoman Ingrid Turner, Prince George's County Council, District 4, and President of MACO. Thank you all for being here. Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.